Good to see everyone here this morning. We appreciate so very much everyone being here. We've got some extra visitors today. We're glad to see all of you all today. Appreciate those who are in the parking lot as well and those who are live streaming. We certainly appreciate all of you tuning in and worshiping with us today. We want to continue today our studies in regards to the home, and today we're going to be talking about being parents. And I think it's very appropriate that not only do we want to bring to parents' attention what God has to say about us being parents, but also as grandparents, because I think that these particular principles apply to grandparents as well. Now, certainly, I think all of us would agree that children are a great blessing from God. And having children is just it's a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. There are great times, enjoyment. But there are times of difficulties, times of responsibilities. And sometimes there are times of heartbreak. We find in the book of Psalms, we find that the psalmist said, "Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate." And I think certainly all of us who are parents and grandparents do appreciate the fact that children are a great blessing to us. Someone said one time that God has a great sense of humor. If you don't believe that, just consider the children God gave you. Well, I think that certainly might be an evidence of that as well. But certainly, from God's perspective, He gives us children as a great blessing. But children are a great responsibility as well. They're not just fun. They're a lot of work. And a lot of hard work. And as you think about children and the responsibilities that you have to take care of them, to provide for them, to really be the examples to them, to do all the things that you know you need to do for your children. This one picture here that I showed here of this man smiling and looks like he's not very nervous. The young man, he seems to be pretty intent on driving the car. But if you've been through as a parent trying to help your child learn how to drive, that is certainly one of the most fulfilled blessings, gift of God that you... Why are you all smiling while I'm saying that? And the rest of you that have children too small to drive, you just don't know what you're in for. But the reality of it is, we as parents do get in the driver's seat and take our lives into our hands and try to get this child to understand the difference between the brake and the gas pedal and forward and reverse. And that can be challenging. You just wait, Heath. You just wait, buddy. You're going to let Robin do it, right? Yeah, okay. Good choice. Children are a great responsibility. And as you think about the great responsibilities that we have as children, this particular passage that we've looked at before, it describes Jesus and how He grew up in human form. And you notice in this text that it first mentions the idea of physically, that He was increasing in stature. Now, probably many of you, as your children are growing, you find a wall and you measure them and put the date by it, you know, and so forth. And as they grow each year, kids love to see, you know, "Wow, look how much I've grown, Dad," and you know, and so forth. And it's just it's a thing that we want our children to grow and to be physically in good health. Also, educationally. We make sure that our children go to school and that they not only go to school, hopefully we see to it that they're doing their homework and that they're learning something. Hopefully they can, you know, go to college and further their education and be able to get a good job and so forth. And as a parent, we have that responsibility to care about that and to see about that. We also have the responsibility to help them socially. And this is indeed a very difficult thing for parents. Just kind of as it goes, kind of reverse psychology. Parents have to learn that that's kind of the way you got to deal with your children. Is that reverse psychology idea? Is that if you really want them to hang around with Fred, you got to encourage them to hang around with Joe. Because when you tell them hang around with Joe, well, reverse psychology is they'll hang around with Fred. So once you kind of learn children do that from time to time, and certainly if they're old enough, and we've talked about this before, to start dating, you as a parent just cringe at the idea that you would even suggest to your child about who they should go out with or who they should date, because your child is probably going to do the opposite or not do that. So to say that a parent is challenged to provide social education and social qualities to your child in regards to others, that is a tremendous challenge. A tremendous challenge. Then, of course, spiritually, the most important thing that a parent does for the child is to provide for them spiritually. Teaching them about God. Praying. How many of us have seen it, maybe with our own child, teaching them maybe to learn to start giving on the Lord's Day. And back when we passed around the plate, you know, ever seen the child, you know, that has the nickel or the quarter in their hand and it's time to give, the plate comes by and the parent is holding that and the child won't let go. And finally you see this, you know, and then finally the quarter comes out and bounces, you know, and, you know, there's fun times. There's fun times sometimes with raising children. About just learning about God. Well, what we learn from this, Paul summarizes. He says, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Certainly as parents, we have the responsibility to provide all that our children need. And to be honest with you, I think as parents, and especially those of us whose children are away from home now, and maybe even now we're grandparents, we begin to focus back on and look back on the decisions we made, the things that we did, the things we didn't do, and we question and we wonder if we did the right thing or if we could have emphasized this a little bit more or done a little bit less of that. And so you do question that and you look at that. And so today I want to appeal to us even as grandparents that while you can't really go back and change things in regards to your children, maybe you kind of get a second chance, maybe with your grandchildren. And maybe to help your children to understand some of the mistakes that you made as a parent, maybe you can help correct in regards to your grandchildren. And again, that's a challenge. But I want to suggest to us as we think about the whole idea of being a good parent, that the center of being a good parent has to do with God. All of the other things will work out. And I'm not saying it just naturally happens. No, you have to spend time making sure those other things are what they ought to be too. But being a parent and teaching your children spiritually is the most important aspect of child rearing. You recall in the Bible that says, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. When my kids were growing up, Mary Lou and I had to learn about Transformers. Nintendo came out. Now I've got grandkids and we're learning about Pokemon and Peppa Pig. Things change, but things remain the same. You really do have to get involved with your children, your grandchildren, to know what they're dealing with, to know what they're going through, in order to provide for them. Therefore, spiritual teaching should be the basis of all that we do with our children. And what I mean by that is, there might be something on television, or there might be the new game that's out, that once you inspect that, once you look at that, it has an immoral basis to it. It has something that's ungodly about it. It has something in the movie that really teaches something against the principles of God. And that is a teaching moment. It is an absolute teaching moment. Because your child is going to want to watch that. Your child is going to they're going to want to participate in that. And you're going to have to explain to them why they cannot watch that or participate in that. And you need to have a biblical foundation to explain that. One of the greatest challenges my children gave to my wife and I was why? Sometimes it's okay to say, well, because I said so. But the older your kids get, that's not going to be an acceptable answer. And sometimes parents are good at just saying no, because I said so, and never ever explaining why, ever. And it will create some resentment in your children. And it seems to them to be unjust, unfair. So when you're talking to your children about whatever it might be, you need to look for a biblical principle. And yes, you need to put it on God. And you need to be able to say to them, well, the reason why it's no, the reason why it's yes, is because God teaches us in, and he says this, and therefore, to make application of that, then we can't do that, or we should be doing this. And I think it's great for parents to establish your relationship with your children, that when you're going to talk to them about right and wrong and what they can and cannot do, it's not just about, well, because I said so. You need to be teaching your children because God said so. And that's important. When we think about the rest of that passage in Deuteronomy, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead, and you shall write them down on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. You see from this passage that it's extremely important that you keep before your children what God says. I'm not saying you have to go around, they have to be quoting Scripture all day long every day. But this passage does describe something that is above and beyond what we would think would be best. And that is, you need to spend a lot of time as a parent keeping God's Word before your children. It is not just a when you go to church thing. It's an all the time kind of thing. You know, when you're taking your kids to ball practices or whatever you're taking them to, you know, piano lessons or whatever, you have a captive audience. And it's a great opportunity to talk to them about their day and what they're dealing with. I teach 10th grade Bible at Athens Bible School, and I regularly, at least once a week, take the opportunity just to stop and try to ask them and have a session where they ask any questions they want to ask. And that's tough for, you know, 15, 16-year-old kids to ask questions. But you kind of get them used to it and so forth and get them into it. And they'll start to ask you questions about things they are dealing with. Things they face. Now, being an old guy myself, I've kind of come to learn what 15 and 16-year-olds do deal with. Because I remember back when I was 15, 16 years old, what I was dealing with. And so if they don't ask a question, I give them a scenario. And some of the scenarios I give them are things that they really have to deal with in life. And I think it's important that you do that with your children. For instance, one of the things that I dealt with 10th grade Bible here the other day, I said, okay, you know, you're out with your friend. And your friend reveals to you that they're gay. What are you going to say to them? Well, some of the reactions was quite expected. But you know what? Your children have to deal with that. And I'm not saying it just happens when they're 15, 16 years old. Are you talking to them about the way that they should respond to that in a godly way? They shouldn't respond to them in hate, being ugly to them, but yet being loving, godly, and kind. Maybe you can use the Jesus with the woman at the well. Look what kind of lady she was. And how did Jesus respond to her? That's a great teaching moment. And parents, if you're not having those kinds of moments with your children, I'm talking about regularly, you're missing the point of this passage. You can't wait for there to be a forest fire before you teach your children how to put out a fire. Now, having said that, I was shocked that I could Google and find a picture of a spanking. I was really, when I pushed child being spanked, I thought, okay, this is going to come up, you know. There was a bunch of pictures. Now, let me start this way. There are two basic philosophies in regards to spanking. There are those that are for it, that would be the parents. And there are those who are against it, that would be the children. But it's really much deeper than that. There are a lot of parents that are against spanking. Now, what I want to do today is just to challenge your thinking a bit. Is it not obvious to you that there are two basic philosophies in life? There is man's wisdom and there is God's wisdom. It's been a long time since my children have been at home. Now I have grandchildren. And I still don't know all the answers. But I know where to get the answers. And that's from God. Remember the passages that talk about my ways are not your ways? My thoughts are not your thoughts? I want to challenge you today as we look at a few passages of Scripture. And I'm sure you're quite familiar with all of these passages. But here's what you as a parent, here's where you have to make a choice. Am I going to follow after the psychology, the philosophy of man? Back in the 60s, Dr. Benjamin Spock, he came out with this child psychology idea that you were absolutely not to touch your child in regards to spanking. And thus we had the generation grow up in the 60s that was one of the most rebellious group generation ever seen. And then you got God's choice, God's wisdom. Now, however you might feel about spanking as a parent, I think you have to stop and you have to ask yourself, why do I feel the way I feel about this? Why have I made the choices that I've made about this? Is it because of what man teaches me, what I think about it, or is it what God has said about it? So, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. So here's the choice you've got. You read the Word of God. And I find myself the older I get, the more I'm looking to the book of Proverbs, because the Proverbs is a great book of wisdom about so many things. Today, in the 21st century, as I've already explained to you, I was surprised I even found a picture on Google of a child being spanked. The philosophy today with most is, don't spank a child because you embarrass them. You humiliate them. You hurt their feelings. And my question is, who said that? Who decided that? One of the greatest challenges, my son, I don't remember my daughter ever asking me these kinds of questions, but just about everything that was said or done, my son would ask this, "Dad, who decided that?" Well, you're supposed to, you know, tie your tie and look neat on something. Who decided that, Daddy? You need to shine your shoes. Who decided that, Daddy? Constantly. Got on my nerves. I want to just punch him out. Now, is that the way you resolve it? No. Was he asking good questions? Absolutely. You know, someone has said when questions are asked and no good answers are provided, the questions will continue to be asked. So parents answering questions, and if you're not good at answering questions, man, you are in trouble as a parent. Because you got to answer some questions. So here's the deal. The rod here. We're not talking about rebarb that you put in concrete. That's a rod. But that's not what the proverb is talking about. If you ever watched Little House on the Prairie, you know, in the schoolroom, and the little sticks, you know, kind of like this, you know, kind of deal, or a conductor, or a Harry Potter's stick, maybe a little longer kind of thing. That's what we're talking about, as far as a rod, a wooden, and it's not for breaking bones and, you know, cracking skulls, you know, not like a billy bat or something other. We're talking about something that, guess what? Embarrasses, humiliates. Today's society, psychologists say you never ever humiliate a child. I challenge you to think about these passages and what God is saying that you must do. Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. Did you know that a child that continually is allowed to do what they want to do and is never, ever disciplined is going to die? Have you ever stopped to think about that? You know, the easiest thing to do with a child is ignore them. I've noticed this in my own kids. These two sitting right here. Well, I'm calling you my son here, Aaron. When our grandkids do something, sometimes they've gotten to the point where they just ignore it. Because they see it, they hear it, and they get used to it. But as a grandparent, you see that and you go, "Ah!" Okay? Did you know, even back when I was a parent, the easiest thing to do when your child misbehaves is act like you missed it? Act like you didn't see it? Because if you see it and you do something about it, then it all gets crazy. Here, the Word of God is saying, you discipline your son while there's hope. When is there hope? Did you know, as a parent, you only have your child for a certain length of time? Before long, they're going to leave home. They're going to be on their own. You've got a small window to deal with your children. And yes, it's much easier to let them have their way rather than scream and fight and fuss and cry and hoot and holler and, you know, we don't want that. Well, give them the candy. My wife and I have said to one another, "What does that kid want?" "Oh, they want that and I'm not giving to it." I said, "For God's sake, please give it to them and let them shut up." Been there and done that? I'm not saying that you never, ever allow the child to express themselves. But what God is saying, make sure that you as a parent express yourself. And that is express yourself that you disapprove of their behavior. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart from it. Did you know there's a right way to go and there's a wrong way to go? And many parents don't know which way to go. A parent that has no spiritual morality about them, they're incapable really of being a good parent because they don't know even which direction to go. So a godly parent knows which direction to go. Remember Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life? So if you see your child going in the wrong direction, you're going to say, whoa, wait a minute, time out, stop. Don't go that way, go this way. There is a way. Train them in the way to go. You know, getting a teen to help out around the house, mow the grass, do the ironing, do some cleaning. How tough is that? I hear Christian parents say, well, I can't get my teenager to do nothing. Now I want you to listen to that statement one more time. I cannot get my teenager to do nothing. What is the problem? It ain't the teenager. And you think, no, wait a minute. I don't believe in that. Then you don't believe what the Lord told you. Who's in control of the house? Quick story, true story, doesn't involve my daughter. Involves my son, though. My son was about 4 years old. He ran on 220. He just would wear my wife out. I'm up here preaching to the brethren, love and kindness, and she's sitting out here in the audience, you know, wrestling a grizzly bear. And at the end of the services, you know, she'd already been back in the back there 5 times, spanked him 10 times. When the amen was said, and I'm at the back of the building shaking the brethren out and hugging everybody, my wife comes up to me, and before services, she was this beautiful woman. At the end of services, she looked like this horrible person. And she's holding this kid, and she says, let's go home now. See you, brethren, I must go home. Been there and done that. One day I'm at the office. My wife calls me and she's crying. You've heard this story, most of you, before. My wife is crying and she says, you need to come home now. And I said, why? What's the matter? Your son, not her son, my son. Your son, I cannot control him. He's out of control. And I said to my wife, very lovingly, very kindly, baby, if you can't handle a boy when he's 4 years old, what are you going to do when he's 15? And I hung up. And when I hung up, I should have been praying. Because I thought, now how am I going to go home? And you just by mere coinkydink, that was one of the best things I ever said to my wife. Because it suddenly dawned on her, she is the adult. She is the mother. And this 4-year-old is totally king in that house. And is doing what he wants to do. So when I got home, and she did let me in, we sat down and discussed it. I spank him with my hand and it hurts me and he don't cry. He's not crying when I spank him. I said, baby, we need to get a bigger stick. We did. We got a fraternity paddle called the Green Monster. When I read these passages, you know, they are at times kind of funny. But sometimes, they're not kind of funny. Because it really does challenge us because of this. Now that doesn't look like any of our children, right? None of our grandchildren ever look like that, right? None. I guarantee you we could take that picture of every person in this building at some point in your life. Because you're a little stinker. And you will do what you try to do and get away with, and children will test you. It's parents that is supposed to have the wisdom from God to say, whoa, wait a minute. You can't continue to act that way. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. Have you heard what God said about that? My little Johnny would never do anything wrong. Oh, my little Susie is always doing the right thing. What kind of la-la land are you living in? When a parent always defends the child, they're tired, or you know, they're sleepy, or they're whatever, to justify bad behavior, you're going against the wisdom of God. Children are going to misbehave. They're going to do wrong. Parents are responsible to teach them not to do that. But what if it hurts their feelings? What if it makes them embarrassed or ashamed? Do you not remember in the book of 2 Thessalonians that even in the church that we mark a brother so that he may be put to shame? Now, world philosophy, you don't shame people in the church. You don't shame children. But what does God say? The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Number one thing I hear all the time from parents, and I don't have all the answers. I do not have all the answers. But a parent says, well, I spank my child, and it doesn't do any good. All I can say to you is, maybe you're doing it the wrong way. We say, well, how am I doing it the wrong way? Well, I don't know. But I know what God says. I know what the world says. Now, what you going to do? Do it God's way. How much of that medicine do you have to take? Maybe until they leave home. That's tough. It's hard. Nobody wants to be the bad guy. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. How many times have you spanked your child and you're not really hitting them that hard, or it's not hurting that bad, but your child will scream like bloody murder, especially when you're in Walmart. When you're in Walmart, you look at your kid, I want this candy, Daddy. No, you can't have it. And they're screaming out. And does the kid know that everybody in Walmart hears them? Yes. Are they expecting that maybe you know that and that you will say, oh, here, have the candy. Shut up. And they take the candy, no tears whatsoever. They were screaming. They were crying, bloody murder. But now you give them the candy and they're fine. Why did they do that? To get what they wanted. Now we raise a child like that. We continually raise a child like that. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen a grown adult treat their parents shamefully? Why is that? Because that grown adult was never taught how to treat their parents when they were children. And prisons are full of those kind of people. You know, the Proverbs gives us great advice. It really does teach us how we should treat our children. The rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. In the first service, I mentioned this, and I'll mention again this service, that I would have much rather had that yardstick beating by my mother than her lecture. Her lecture would cover from Genesis to Revelation twice, and she would talk to me and preach to me longer than any preacher ever thought about preaching. And I'm sitting there, and I never did roll my eyes. Well, I did a few times, and I learned not to do that. But you learn not to roll your eyes. You learn to listen. And I'm going to tell you something. I remember those beatings with a yardstick. Now, I say beating. Today probably would be child abuse. But my mother would take that big, thick yardstick and she would just break it all to pieces all over me. And I remember those whippings. But I'll tell you something else I remember is those talking to's. I don't know if I remember telling you this or not, but I was about 16 years old. I thought I was done grown and a man among men. 16 years old. Sitting in church next to this sweetheart little girl. Oh, she's the cutest thing. And she and I were just talking up a storm during worship service. And she was so cute. And she was just all into me. And I was all into her. And my mother turned around and saw me. And she went like this. And I got up in the middle of worship service and walked all the way up front and sat by my mother at 16 years old. Children today would say, I don't have to do what you say. I can do what I want to. I'm 16 years old. Really? Did you not hear Joshua when he said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord? And the greatest quote in my lifetime was, but my father, as long as you put your feet underneath my table, you're going to do what I say. Y'all heard that story? You heard that? There's a lot of truth to that. And kids need to learn that. Correct your sons and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. I must tell you this, and I've told you this before, I think, those who remember here. Conversation I had with my son one time. My son, he'll soon be 40, I think. This has been about 20 years ago. He was in his 20s. He said to me one day, we were together, and he said, Dad, I'd like to talk to you about the way I was raised. And I thought, oh. Because I was really hard on Daniel. Daniel needed me to be hard on him. He said, Dad, you know all those spankings you gave me? Yeah. The green monster? Yeah. He said, I just want to thank you for doing that. Would you say that one more time, son? He said, I want to thank you for spanking me. He said, I know you was really rough on me and I needed it. I never in all of my life thought my son would ever say such a thing. I thought he hated me because I disciplined him. I guess I forgot to read Proverbs 29:17. Your children, for a time, may think you are mean and cruel, but you just remember, you're trying to save their soul. You're not trying to be their best buddy. You're trying to be their parent. You're trying to get them to heaven. So, made up this little analogy. I'd like you to think about the success of you being a parent. If you had been Noah, would you have gotten your children on the boat? I ain't going on the boat. My friends are not going on the boat. Are you kidding me, Dad? I ain't getting on that boat. What do you think Noah said? I have no idea what Noah said. But I will tell you this one thing. There is not one word about the three sons' faith. There's not one word about their wives' faith. There's not a word about his wife's faith. But there was a word about Noah's faith. And guess what? His sons got on the boat. For whatever that's worth. Would your children have gotten on the boat? Now this is a real toughie. If you've been Noah, would your children have helped you build the ark for 120 years when you can't even get them mowed front yard? 120 years. Question. Who was in charge of that household? Who was in charge? If you had been Noah, would you have been happy you had saved your family? Whatever fussing there may have been, get on the boat. Whatever fussing there may have been, clean up the poop over there in section 29 of the ark. Whatever the arguments were, in the end, when they got off the boat and they were saved, who do you think was happy about that? Noah had a great faith in God and obeyed all that the Lord commanded him. I challenge all of you as parents to take this great book and do all that God commands you to do as a parent. Don't question. Don't distrust. Stop listening to men and their philosophies and their ideas and raise your children to fear God. Stop hem-hawing around about it. Stop complaining about it. Your children are a gift from God. Treat them as God's gift. But love them. Really love them. And when it's time to get on the boat, get them on the boat. My guess is those boys got on the boat because they saw their daddy get on the boat. Thank you for listening this morning. Tough lessons about the home. It involves where we live every day. I've made lots of mistakes. My guess is you have too. But we can do better. We can do more. We can serve God. We can learn more. And we can teach our children and help them to be the kind of people they ought to be. If there's one here this morning who is not a Christian, we want to encourage you to become a Christian. And you know, when all is said and done, one last admonition to all you parents and grandparents. Here's the object, here's the point of the whole life on this earth is to get your kids on the boat. If you don't get your kids on the boat, have you been successful? You got to do what it takes to be done. If we can help you in any way, why don't you come as we stand and sing. I have decided.